Good morning and welcome to the analyst call of Volker Wessels for the review of the 2019 annual results. Jan De Ruyter, Jan Van Rooyen, and Alfred Vos are present at the other side of the line. Jan De Ruyter will give a short review of the year. After the review, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I give the floor to Mr. De Ruyter. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and good morning to everybody on the call, and obviously down here in Amsterdam in the room. As said, I will give a few comments on the 2019 results, and then let's move straight into Q&A. As reported, our EBITDA for the year, including OpenEye, but before IFRS 16, came in at 269, which compares to 251 on the previous year, so an increase of 80 million. This is in line with the outlook that we gave at the time of our third quarter results. Order book at the end of 2019 was 8.9 billion, which is again in line with the end of 2018, although the composition clearly is different. One remark on OpenEye. The completion of OpenEye is now close to 80%, and during the fourth quarter, we decreased the loss provision for OpenEye by 4 million euros, which means that the total provision year-on-year has increased by 4 million. That means that the project now stands at 111. At the time of the Q3 numbers, we have given a managerial expectation on where we believe the project will end, and that range remains between -110, so that is the worst case, and the best case is -77.5. Another important event is that last week we announced the launch of our in-house developed NOx nitrogen filter, and that filter enables us to lower our nitrogen deposition by up to 99% during the construction phase of our projects. This is an innovative solution, and we are taking our part in making our sector more sustainable. At the same time, you should take into account that the NOx filter only helps in the realization phase, so in the user phase. We still argue that the government should take measures in order to make sure that the nitrogen discussion in the Netherlands is coming to a closure. Similar to what we have seen in the press, nitrogen is the topic. However, there are lots and lots of other things which are going well. We have made big steps in terms of innovative and sustainable solutions, for instance, in our PureWonen concept, a circular living concept. Volker Wessels, as you know, stands on six feet. Three of them, to a certain extent, are impacted by nitrogen. Internationally, this problem is not an issue. In the Netherlands, infrastructure is mostly impacted, energy and telecom least, and in construction and real estate, we believe that the NOx filter will definitely help us in limiting the impact of nitrogen. Having said that, we are overall satisfied with the results, and we have given the outlook for 2019 that we expect 2020 to be in the same range as where we are coming towards 2019. Those are my introductory remarks, and I think it's time for questions. Who can I give?
I'll start off. Martijn den Drijver, ABN AMRO.
Yes.
Can you maybe give an update on what you're seeing in the residential market? You've been quite vocal about what you're seeing in the income market. I'll have some follow-up questions on that, but what are you seeing in the residential market in terms of affordability?
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. If you have a question or remark, please press star one on your telephone. Star one for questions or remark. Please go.
We first have a question down here in Amsterdam, and the question is, what do we see in the residential market in the Netherlands?
Environment, competitive environment, pricing specifically.
Yeah, I think But I'll add to that. I think it's more or less the same as what we have seen over the last 2 years. Affordability is becoming more of an issue. House prices continue to increase, and the cost of construction also continues to increase. So demand remains pretty strong. Clearly, Amsterdam and the bigger cities is more difficult in order to get the permits, in order to get the construction going. And you see it basically, the waterbed effect, that it is now spreading out to other parts of the country. So overall, a healthy market, but prices are high.
What do you want to add, Alfred?
Yeah, well, Jan touched upon the topics that create the current dynamic. I think the market is solid for us. We are well positioned with all the different disciplines that we have in the group, having development components, construction components, industrial components that actually help us create product that is answering to the demand that is growing, being more sustainable, being more future-proof. And the combination of regulations, legal issues, such as nitrogen right now on a national level, but also new rules that apply to the construction of residential product in the Netherlands that are all, because that is what a lot of people forget, it's not spread out over the market in a period of 6 years. This is all coming in 18 months' time. And that disruption is creating, issues that eventually all boil up into a different price level. Because if you need to produce homes that are off the gas, so energy neutral, we have to take care of all kinds of measures that are created by elements like nitrogen or like governments, local governments that are increasing their land prices significantly, because they also think that the time of, offloading their land bank and filling their government budgets. You can see it here in Amsterdam, but you can also see it in other places where sometimes land prices are being doubled in a short period of time. All of those elements eventually end up in a cost price for a home, and that is creating a significant part of the increase. And as long as, financing costs remain where they are, I think that the overall effect for the consumer is relatively foreseeable, but there will be a point in time, and you will see a difference there. As Jan just explained, it's like a waterbed element right now, that where in the cities you can see that the affordability of homes is becoming an issue. That means that now suddenly areas in other places of the country that are not being looked at, that have not been looked at 6 months ago, are now suddenly being recognized as potential for, new residential products.
And I was assuming also that given that the volume of projects that can move forward will decline, that there would be more competition amongst the construction companies to win those projects, even though prices may have to go up, which would mean a double negative revenue. You have to adhere to the higher cost price because of what you just mentioned, so cost slows down. And on the other side, you have more competition for the fuel project. Is that something that you...
Well, we don't see a decline. We do see a delay. That's something else. And whoever can deal with the delay and with the disruption, and I think that we are well-positioned because of the structure that we have. As you all know, we are all over the country. So we have a good local presence, and I think we are still in the position that we can still capture a reasonable amount of projects locally. I think, and I can't speak for the other marketplace, but if you're not present in those local markets and you're depending on, land tenders, that will definitely apply to your...
And that's especially the latter, right? That we have the financial muscle to take positions which are longer-term positions. So last year, Kabels to Delft, we still have a lot of construction to do in Amsterdam North. Yeah, exactly. So the fact that we are financially very sound allows us to take these positions, which basically secure your building volume going forward and your development volume going forward.
And in construction and real estate development, we do tender only a small portion of our total volume, right? And so 70% is non-tender work within construction and real estate development.
Yeah, what you now read in the press is that especially if residential permits are falling back by the way, when we're at 28 or 35% or whatever, I think partly down to the fact that the areas calculator was switched off on the back of this State Council ruling in May last year. It was reopened on the 16th of September, so there is a bit of a backlog. And it could well mean that in the first quarter of this year or the second quarter of this year, all of a sudden, there will be a ramping up of permits for residential units. Now, if the air bubble in the chain is in time short enough, then you can deal with it. Obviously, if it becomes longer and longer and longer, it will impact your business more and more.
But that's especially in infra. And
that's much more in infra, exactly, and in construction and real estate. You have a couple of examples where we had construction sites which were impacted by nitrogen and which are now being back on track or at least constructing again by applying the NOx filter that we developed over the last couple of months.
And then adding on that, if you look at 2020, you have the sale phenomenon, which will push again wage inflation up.
Yeah.
You will have the debt arbitrage in balance.
Yeah.
Will have a negative effect. Bobby, what is your view on that in relation to your margins in that?
I think that's what you see. So the question is what the impact is on my margins because of a new wage agreement that is being negotiated as we speak for the construction sector and the participation law, which is starting on the 1st of January, I believe, right?
Correct.
I think what you can generally see is that the cost of construction is rising. And that means that we have to do two things. There where we have to try to become more efficient, i.e. this will drive more towards industrialization, but that's what we're already doing for quite some time. But that just reaffirms that that trend is the right direction. And a large part of us will be passed on to the end consumer.
Because it's a law, so it's for everybody.
Yeah, it's a level playing field.
But it will, we have to work harder.
Yeah.
That's for sure, because in addition to what Jan just said, especially in the parts of our business where we work with blue collar, and that's primarily the energy and the telecom division, we can probably pass on some of the increases in the telecom business a little bit easier, simply because there is far more demands than the availability of supply, so customers will accept it. We just have to charge it. And on an arm's length basis, we do see that in the energy sector, which is still regulated and semi or completely government, we get letters back from those clients saying that they do not recognize these wage increases and they are not willing to pay for it from the procurement departments. And I'm not saying that that means a no, but it just means that we have to work harder to convince them that this is just passing on something that is also being enforced upon us. But it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. But I wouldn't say it's an automatic decrease of margin. I'm just saying that we have to work harder to maintain the same margins.
Okay, listen, there's inflation in the chain. And that was last year. That was the year prior to that. And
but this is far more predictable because you can see this coming
than
3 years ago when we had big layers with price increases of 40%.
A slight increase in pension contribution. There's a demand for increase in wages and in the Bauer Info sale. And I think it is ongoing. That the counter offer was published the day before yesterday by Bauer Megalog. So the negotiations are ongoing as we speak.
So what was their offer?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but I know what the benchmark is, but I haven't checked whether they did what we asked them to do. I presume they did.
Thank you.
Is there anybody on the phone with a question, operator?
At this moment, there are no questions, but I can still press star one for questions and remarks. Yep. So if you have a question, please press star one.
Okay, but then we stay in Amsterdam.
So for 2020, I expect results in line with 2019, but can you give a more divisional split on that? Given, for example, North America suffered a bit from weather circumstances. In a normalized year, I expect this to be better. Better.
Yeah.
But then that implies that another division is coming down. So
I think that if we look at the composition of the results, then the expectation that we have today is that infra is still hurt by nitrogen, and it's very difficult to make a forecast, especially on the 14th of February, given the fact that the solution, in our opinion, to that particular issue is a political solution. And every Friday there is a cabinet meeting, and if they want, in our opinion, if they want to resolve it this afternoon, they can, because then they have to increase the nitrogen deposition level. So that makes infra difficult to forecast. But I think that you're right, in North America, on the assumption that we get a normal weather pattern, that should move better. I think in Germany we are doing well. I think that construction and real estate, if you look at the order book, should be doing well. So it's a bit, but I don't expect huge differences in the composition relative to what we reported over 2019. All within spitting distance. Yeah.
Yeah, and another question. You mentioned that some buyers are taking advantage of the current situation in infra to postpone projects in order to get a better price in the future. Is that a cost of burden project or customer?
There are. What we see is from time to time, I also say that this is a very irregular pattern, but from time to time what you see is that large clients take the view that if they delay by a couple of months, that prices will go down even further, given the fact that everybody needs to work. Basically, the call that we make is that the whole nitrogen deposition situation is something which is a problem, if you like, a society problem, and that it is relevant and important that everybody takes its responsibility in order to, if you have work, put it into the market, especially if you are partly owned by the government or fully owned by the government, or you are a community, but is it a city or a province? Simple as that.
Yeah, but if I look at your backlog, then it still holds up quite well. So I would have expected a bit more impact from the lower number of new provinces last year.
Yeah, I think what you see is that the smaller projects, we saw a delay in especially smaller projects, say September, October, is slowly moving back. So I wouldn't say it is yet at normal level, but that is catching up. But what you do see on the very large projects, those are all delayed. And by the end of December, the Dutch cabinet came with a number of measures in order to help this whole nitrogen debate, one of them being that we are all going to use a low speed limit, and that there is now subsidy for farmers to go out of business, and a number of other issues. In that communication, they have also said that they will create a nitrogen deposition bank, and that 70% of the savings of all the measures that are being taken basically have to be squared against nature, so you can't use it. But 30% is available for large infrastructure projects, and they have mentioned seven, which one, I think the Hoevelaken was one of them, the Ring Utrecht Zuid, and a few others. In The Hague, people believe that problem solved because we have these seven projects and we have this nitrogen deposition bank. But in real life, the nitrogen deposition bank is not yet operational. It's not yet there. It's all planning. And that means that those seven projects are not moving to the market and that nobody is working on that. The only thing that we do know that if the rule is there, then it will be applied for those projects. And the absence of those projects results in lower utilization of heavy equipment. It results in lower utilization of your asphalt plants, and that obviously has an impact on the margin of your overall infra business. So it is therefore still possible that you can pick up smaller work, but that smaller work is not, in our particular case, helping the utilization rate of both plant and equipment.
And the dilution in these little margin trains that we have is causing dilution. It's just like with you guys, you know, you sit in an office, you have your teams, and then suddenly you cannot operate any more in this market here, and you need to pick up and go to Berlin or go to somewhere else and set all new businesses up. That means that everybody needs to get adjusted to the new circumstances. Your depreciated offices here with pretty low, you know, and a very efficient flow is suddenly being disrupted and you have to go somewhere else and then do it again. And you will probably be successful, but it will have an impact on your margins because your business model is disrupted. That's what we also said earlier to the press, is that we can adapt, and like the NOx filter is a good example, we actually like the market to move to a more sustainable market and you know, to be off the gas and to, you know, end up in a society where the air is going to be cleaner, because this is actually what we are. We can build all that stuff. But the disruption that all these new regulations are being just forced upon the industry, month after month, the new stuff coming and the half is just passing it through without any transition period, that makes it very complex. It makes it very complex because there's no time for us to adapt. And as Jan said, if you have a heavy capacity-driven business and that capacity-driven business is almost coming to a standstill, you can, of course, use part of those teams on different type of projects, but you're still dealing with, you know, a significant amount of invested capital in equipment and kit and plant that you can't use today. So, and that has an effect on your profitability. So, in other words, if you look at the backlog, it's actually going quite well in certain other areas, but we could have been in a different position if this would not have happened.
Yes, we made the same calculation that you guys did at the end of 2018. You said, the price report 251, you take a provision of 39 million on the back of the C-lock. That's not going to happen in 2019, so your starting position is 290.
Yeah.
Now, by the time today, yes, that is, we say that the capacity of the country is that we should be able to get there. Now, you see that the C-lock in 2019 did cost about 4 million, so that's marginal. But the recovery in infra has to be less if you take into account the provision of 2018. Now, part of that is down to the fact that this whole disruption, which by the end of the day is temporary, because in life everything is temporary, ultimately you resolve it, that takes time. If The Hague is telling us that you should be fully electric with all your equipment, on the proviso that that can be done, which we, by the way, do not think so, but let's assume it can, who is going to pay for the accelerated depreciation of the equipment that you have? Yeah. So our ask to our government is very simple. We believe that...
Of course, you need significant cash to upgrade your equipment for that stuff that... And as we said in one of our earlier press releases, the Netherlands is a very tiny player in the equipment market. So why would all the worldwide equipment suppliers produce specific products just for this little niche market? It's a challenge.
What can happen? Anyway, so I think that and yet again, recently we had a discussion with the people in The Hague. We are, if you sit in the helicopter, the construction sector is about 6% of the problem. So So even if we completely resolve the construction sector nitrogen deposition problem, then we still, as a society, have a big problem because it's marginal. So we are putting a lot of focus on something which, in my opinion, is not a problem. So we have asked for a sectoral raising of the deposition norm. It is now zero. It is 0.0049. And if you stay below 0.0049, you don't have to have a permit. If you are north of that, you need a permit. So you need for everything a permit. Now, if you go to Germany, it's much higher. And we say, listen, if you make the spot 0.0491, everything below the one is permit free, at least for this particular nature law, and everything above you will need to. In our opinion, that is not going to make the situation in the current habitat areas any different than it already is today. So apart from that, so it's not going to be a significant worsening of the existing situation. Separately, you should clearly try to improve what was already damaged over the last 20 years. And that is a separate, that's the zogenaamde bronmaatregel. That's a separate discussion. But it is in our opinion that you can do it both simultaneously. It is not that you have to stop everything in order to fix that. You can continue here and then still fixing there. Now, the cabinet is telling us that they are studying on a new nitrogen deposition norm, higher than what we have today. And their challenge is that they need to find something which is basically standing up in court. Because the last thing that they want is to end up with a situation, okay, we say that this is the number, somebody goes to court, and 2 years further down the road, we again end up in a situation that that is proven to be unlawful. But that's a bit of the debate where we are in today, and the sooner this is fixed, the quicker this whole tendering machine will start moving again. Because also, Rijkswaterstaat is obviously not happy with this whole situation. Their preference is to be able to put money into the market. The idea that what you saw yesterday, that after a storm, that we cannot put sand on the coast, but we are, come on guys, get yourselves into the helicopter, and yeah, it's amazing. Het is finished.
Okay, well, do you think that the sense of urgency of the government is sufficient? Because there was a lot of turmoil and they took some measures, and it appears that they think that's sufficient, but they've already announced. But, well, I have to say that I'm feeling that you don't think it's sufficient.
It's their reality.
I don't think that they think that still. I think they know.
Okay.
Tom is spending a lot of time on, and we as well, but there are many meetings where we are trying to push for an industry standard that's going to work for all of us.
Listen, the real what we said in August is that this has all the characteristics of a slow motion train accident, with the emphasis on slow motion. Anything that you build in 2019 is permitted in 2017, maybe 2016, and so it's always a delay. So before the whole train comes grinding to a halt, it can take 1 or 2 years. So the insiders can see this one coming because the underutilization of staff and equipment is now internal, but that will slowly but steadily move out. I think if you go back into the financial crisis, in 2011, there were zero tower cranes above Amsterdam, and the accident happened in 2008. So then it continues, and then all of a sudden it drops off a cliff, and then it takes a couple of years to come back again. Now, what we try to say to them, listen, this is the same situation, different cause, but you have to take measures in order to prevent the real accident, so the laying off of people to happen in end of this year or maybe 2021, etc. But you can see that the activity levels are coming down.
I just was wondering, coming back to your comments about entities that are partly owned by the government, fully owned by the government, maybe a strange remark, but why isn't Nederland or somebody else doing the naming and shaming, or why isn't the Rijkswaterstaat pushing this more forward? Because if they're so committed to the industry...
There's a very simple explanation. If you are the chief procurement officer of XYZ, you're doing a hell of a good job.
Yeah. Any company that has procurement... That's a project in Zeeland for TenneT, where we spend a significant amount of money in It was also announced, so this is not news. So we're actually having a court case against them. And we can't talk about the contents, but the reason why we think we've been treated unfair is we've spent a significant amount of money in calculation costs. And then two contractors have made an offer, two. And then in this case, the client feels that they are not supplied with enough offers, so they just decide to cancel the tender and then not compensate anybody. We're talking about 600,000 that's gone. And so we are fed up with that situation. We want to make sure that we, you know, that is not fair and reasonable. But that money is you know, it's a margin.
But this is our perspective. So we,
it's our perspective. Yeah,
our perspective.
They think that they have the right to do it, and that's why we have to go to court.
And maybe they have the right to do it because, but I always take a view, if you have in any company where you have a chief procurement officer who is operating in total isolation, I wouldn't buy
or reporting to, or reporting to the CFO.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. And I think that if you, and therefore I think this whole, if you look at this discussion, it's almost irrational because we are focusing on nitrogen. If on the back of, so we are saving nitrogen because we are making a different approach to building site, but taking a different approach to building site safety is probably an issue because we are now passing three, what is it, schools all of a sudden. And because we use another road, then the model is telling you that the nitrogen deposition is zero. It's the same carbon, so it's a model. And we don't even talk about carbon dioxide, which is increasing because we have to take a detour. So it is, but that's, yeah, in my opinion, and that's why I think that everybody should sit up, go up in the helicopter, and then look back, so what are we actually doing here? Are we now solving a problem, or are we basically lost in our own virtual reality? In my opinion, it's the latter.
I have a different question then with regards to nitrogen. Can we go this way?
Yeah, sure. Go
ahead. Thanks. I have a question about the slide 29 about the provisions. And it's nice to see the breakdown. And my question is, how much of the provisions at the end of 2019 relate to the C-log? And can you give a bit of a feeling for the cash outflow in 2020 on that? So I think it's on the other provisions with a star in it, 116 and 126. Slide 29.
I think it's almost fully funded, the loss, and it's also by the way the sort of the funding mechanism with the project financing banks works. So I think that's the question to the to the latter part of, or the answer to the latter part of your question. So if you look at the loss of 111 million, that's almost funded in the project by the EPC partners. And the part of the loss that's still in the onerous contract provision, then it's 20% of our share in loss. So then it's 20% of 111 million.
And are there any other big problematic projects in that? It's quite an amount.
Yeah, no, but it's sort of, and it's quite a constant amount, and it's basically scattered all over the company.
Okay, this is a normal course of business.
Yeah.
Okay. And then a question on slide 22, because you always also give a quite a good breakdown of the strategic working capital.
Yeah.
There's a big decrease in the different components. So probably one of them is that you are still aiming to lower the invested capital of the company, so that you try to get rid of the, less attractive land positions.
Yeah.
But can we also see here the change in market conditions? If you look at, for instance, property development, property held for sale, it's significantly down from, the end of 2018. Is that already an indication for where the market is heading?
Yes, so if you look at the strategic working capital, and you can look at individual components, but I prefer to look at the total number because it all relates to each other and it's all related to property development.
Yeah, because it moves around, of course, from different...
correct, then over the last year, the improvement was 40 million. Since the IPO, the total improvement has been 180 million. So the ambition is to reduce it to 200 million, but not sure whether we will be achieving that, because we are at the moment also acquiring, as Jan mentioned, quite a large number or a number of larger development projects for the long term. And as I said before, you need, of course, land to build. So reducing the strategic working capital has been a goal, but I think we are sort of bottoming out there now.
Okay.
And also in Germany, we are acquiring more land positions there now. But also in the Netherlands, there are quite a number of very large positions that we have successfully acquired over the last year. So you see this, the pace of reducing the strategic working capital slowing down, and I think we are bottoming that.
Okay, that's clear. One final question. During the interim results release, you were quite, in our view, gloomy on the outlook. Eh? You are looking back, but you were quite right on what happened in the Netherlands. But you then also mentioned, of course, the outlook on the UK market. The results have been quite strong in the second half and on the full year. So what is your view on the UK market right now?
Well, we were primarily, I think, covering the element of uncertainty in the UK market. Yeah. Not so the fact that we were not, because at that time we also indicated to you also in the interim numbers that, you know, the performance in the UK, you know, at the time being is still pretty strong. But that uncertainty is not good. And that we also noticed in the market that uncertainty was causing some turmoil. But I think the fact that there's no certainty is just actually a positive.
This obviously was also an internal debate, because the share price reaction in August,
it was a bit too much after lunch. Yeah.
I found it bizarre, but anyway. What we said was that we see delay in commencement of large, that's true. We see a delay in the commencement of large infrastructure. I also believe that the permit intensity of Volker vessels, if you like, relative to other competitors in the Netherlands, is higher because of this emphasis on smaller projects, so that could be seen. For Brexit, at the time, we said, well, listen, Brexit was still an issue. It could go either way. Yeah, it could have blown out of the water. Right now, say, at least you have a strong majority government and also a prime minister, as we have seen yesterday, who is willing and able to take decisive action if he believes that it's necessary. He is very much pro-infrastructure, on the back of which High Speed 2, which is the single biggest infrastructure project in Europe, is now starting, or at least continuing. So I think that the impact of Brexit and the potential risk of Brexit has diminished. How this will pan out by the end of the year, whether there will be a trade agreement, yes or no, difficult to say, because you could argue that we will similarly be in a similar position, that it will be very much opposed. But the spending of the UK government on the island will increase, and that is beneficial for all contractors, including ourselves.
Yeah, I think for us most important is that there is now a strong majority government, so that decisions can be made, including decisions on large infrastructure projects.
So that's the absence of, if High Speed 2 would have cancelled, that would have a significant negative impact on the construction industry in the UK, because then all of a sudden there is a lot of capacity coming back to the market, which otherwise would have been used on High Speed 2.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And those exotic projects will have an impact, both positive and negative.
So I think we warned for the risks. I think that nitrogen, I hope that you guys agree with us that at least what happened over the last 6 months in the Netherlands has at least put a magnifying glass on the fact that people at least experienced this as an issue, to put it mildly. Will it be resolved? Ultimately, yes. Anything will ultimately be resolved. But quicker is better than longer. In that perspective, Brexit is now much clearer than it was 6 months ago. And in Germany, the Mietendeckel, the rent freeze increase has been introduced. That's law now, by now?
Yes?
On the 1st of January, yeah.
And I think that that will have an impact ultimately on, if you do the whole calculation of real estate development, that should lower land prices in Berlin, provided that institutional investors continue to demand the same return as before. That's a reset of the market. And that is, at least there is clarity now, so the market is now focusing on this new situation.
That's good. Is that the reason that you saw a slowdown in the second half in Germany?
We had some delays because of deals, because when this element was introduced, deals that were lined up to sell to investors were suddenly postponed, because the investors have to recalculate based on, you know, the expected outcome of what they call the meter deck.
Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing then today, that those projects are moving forward again? Or?
The deals, one of them has moved forward, but at a different price level.
And I think what we
between the price.
We do not disclose individual deals, but there's more delta than a few euros, because it basically is immediately impacting your what they call market growth specifics that you build into a real estate model as an investor. So if you, for example, build a market growth expectations based on let's say indices that are coming from the CBXs in that specific area on how life is going to develop over time, because that's the way they look at it, and you suddenly have a meter deckle, I mean, that could be over 30 years, have an impact of, 50 or 25 basis points per annum, which is down calculated over a 30-year period. So that could be about
20%. Yes, but on the other hand, you see real estate land bank prices decrease now. So that's an opportunity.
Yeah, but there is not money in the bank today. That means that we first have to invest, and it will take 2 to 5 years when those projects are going to materialize.
So today what we said was in August, we said we will do more than 2018, which is what we did. But if you look back on the year, we had at the start of 2019, we aimed higher than the 2016. And that's basically the message that we gave in August, which we are still fully behind. But obviously with all the hassle in the stock market, we could argue whether we should have taken a different course, but it is what it is. But materially, and also if you, on the back of the discussion that we had 6 months ago in the same room, I think we gave a lot of color and qualification on how we read the market at that moment in time. Read the market. Andre, your turn.
On the offer, we've seen Wegborg moving up to 35%, still long shot towards 85-95. Have you met with any fierce opposition, angry shareholders, rebellions?
No. No, we listened at the launch of the offer. We had a number of shareholders who informed us that they had hoped for more, which I think is the natural position to take. No, and I think that there is nobody now north of 3%. We obviously look at the market, and sometimes we find it difficult to understand why blocks are traded above the 21.92. We have now learned that part of that is trading technical, because we are a small stock and the bidding goes in 5 cents. I wasn't aware of that in this time of age. I find that bizarre, but anyway. But I think in 2 weeks' time, we will find out. So Regenborg now is slightly over 75%. Management has signed up in the merger protocol that they will tender the shares that they have, so that will give them another 1.2%. So they are at 76.2. But we were only allowed to tender
76.2.
So we were only allowed to tender. We are not allowed to sell to Regenborg, so we need a tender. So that's why it is not yet acquired by them. And in 2 weeks' time from now, we'll find out. And banks keep telling us that it is very normal that you will only find out at the very last minute, because all the brokers and all the banks will only put their tendered shares to Kempen.
in one block after closing on Friday the 28th. So we...
Possibly only a lot of sleep.
I don't know. You tell me. It's. I think that there are passive funds who we are being told that they will wait until the final day. There's a story that it is cheaper to put your money in Volker Wessels stock than put it at ING at minus 50 bips. yeah, but also, but if you use the time value of money, then that doesn't hold. But I find it personally strange because you are in a rising market. And if I were a fund manager, I would have sold them immediately and put my money into the market in order to take to enjoy the ride. But
that's why I asked the question. So I would expect it to be higher already.
Yeah, but we have zero indication that the market, if you like, is demanding a higher price. Zero. And whether we will. What the outcome will be, I have no idea. The only thing that people assure me is that on day one, it is more than 95%, would be your first ever in the Netherlands. So they say. But that's your colleagues and your colleagues. No, I haven't double-checked on their statements. But if I lie, I lie on behalf of them.
Can you elaborate a little bit on
I was just saying, sounds great. Very deep, very polite.
Last question. Last question.
Mark's very good idea. A couple of questions. First of all, at NG Telecom Infrastructure, you mentioned that backlog decreased due to volume delivered on long-term framework contracts, but you mentioned as well underlying order book increased significantly. Could you put some color to that?
Telecom is decreased, and that is caused by eating up another year in a long-term framework contract with one of our clients. And on the other hand, if you look at the energy sector, this will not surprise you, especially in the e-transition type of work that we do, we see an increase in the order book. That's a different company.
Yeah, okay, the report number was somewhat overall. And if you mention underlying, that sounds to me like it's a number which is not really officially mentioned in the order book you publish, or very difficult.
It will be Jan, but I just explain what the reason is
if you adjust for the volume taken out of the long-term framework agreements, and if you adjust for that, then underlying we see an increase in our order book.
Yeah. And with respect to the other elements, there was a sharp increase in loss, particularly in the second half of this year. Explain why.
Yeah, so I think we've disclosed that in the press release also that in 2018, as part of reducing our non-core assets, we have divested a number of assets at a book profit. So 2018 is including a number of book profits that are not included in 2019 in other. And also on our innovation and digitization, we have made significant investments to our P&L, and that's also roughly 10 million euros.
Not because you mentioned in the press release, but more or less if I look at the free cash flow forecast you generated this year, then more or less shall be in the neighborhood of some 350 million. If I look at the net cash flow from operating activities, that's 485. If I subtract capex, then more or less as you derive at that level.
Yeah, it's 267, because we also have to adjust the lease expenses that used to be part of our operational cash flow and are now part of our financial.
When we look at the past 3 years, management has, I think, done a great job with Volker Wessels.
Sorry, it's on page 23 of the booklet that you have the free cash flow. On the left hand upper side.
In the past 3 years since the IPO, management of Volker Wessels has done a great job growing business, keeping EBITDA margins more stable, but okay, hopefully it should have been good. But particularly generating a lot of cash. according to me, between 650 and 700 million, returning from a major, or not major, from a net debt situation to a major net cash situation. So, very good job. When the company was listed, more or less it was trading at EV to EBITDA 7.5 and a free cash flow yield of 12. If I look now today, when Regal is making the acquisition, it is an EV to EBITDA of 4 and a free cash flow yield of over 25%, about 25% free cash flow yield. Do you think that these, because you agreed on the offer, that these valuations justify or more or less clarify for you the impact of nitrogen and PFAS, etc., all these environmental issues, which at the end of the day also mentioned are temporary?
Yeah, but as I said, everything is temporary in life, so even life itself. So, yeah, the answer, short answer to that is yes, you have taken that into account.
But there are more relevant aspects as well. If you look at the entire industry and if you make the same calculation for our competitors, then the entire industry has been derated over the same 3-year period.
If you look at it this way, the fairness opinions were assessed on the Q3 numbers. And clearly, we are now one quarter further down the road. We obviously have taken into account outlook, expectation, etc. And there is not a substantial difference compared to today, compared to what was at the middle of October, November. So the answer to this is yes, we still believe it's a fair price. That our shareholders agree, but that was always the case in November as well. We will find out over the next few weeks.
Thank you. Are we sure now?
With regards to the Seabulk OpenAI, can you elaborate a little bit on what's changed that you have this relatively small but still release provision? And secondly, now that you have completion up to, what was it, 80% plus, how are your discussions with Rijkswaterstaat about possible compensation progressing? That's one. And the second one is Nonox. Obviously, it's still early days, but can you talk a little bit about interest from your colleagues about the solution that you have available, and that you will make available for the mobile equipment?
Seabulk. So the two major components are installed in the caissons. And I think the current status of the project is that the project is behaving itself in the normal course like any other large project of this size. So that means that the volatility that you've seen in the last couple of years is now more or less out of the ordinary course of the project, and it will show a more stable pattern. Also, during time, you get more intel on the issues that you're facing in the project, plus that there's not much more that can be discussed or can be changed caused by deficiencies in design or caused by requests from clients. And when you've passed that point, projects typically tend to become very stable. And that's also the case at IJmuiden. And why am I not using very stable on IJmuiden? And we say it's kind of stable because it's so large, so and complex, and we also want to make sure we inform all of you in a proper manner. So because there's still out there, 400 to 800 people working there. So if you have a few days delay because of the storm, like we had last weekend, impact and cost is immediately pretty significant. So, but overall, it's pretty stable now. Your other question was regarding the discussion with Rijkswaterstaat.
But just to follow up on what you just mentioned, prior to the lowering of the second case, it was like, oh, this is really big, risky, and there was even a final addition to the provision just before that.
That'd be correct. It's not really all risky.
Oh, I hope you said there are three milestones.
First caisson, second caisson, doors coming from Korea to Rotterdam. And the whole debate on the second caisson, because that was recalculated on behalf of Rijkswaterstaat whether it was doable in the first place. That's why this committee, the Hoornberg,
those three elements were falling in the category pregnant or not pregnant.
Yeah.
So there's nothing in between. So if the doors don't come, you know, you don't want to sit in these chairs. If the first caisson doesn't land well, you don't want to be in this, because then there's no project. I mean, the difference between a success or no success, normally in a project, if you have an issue with piles or, you know, a panel is not working, you can fix it and at a cost. But this is were three elements that were not recoverable when they were going wrong. And that is where we say that risk is now out of the project because they are delivered. If those caissons would crack, or they would set in a different way, that sea lock would never happen. And then what?
It kind of confirms what I was going to say, that the 4 million release is actually quite modest, given that the project has de-risked materially.
Yeah, but that's a different situation. What we have done, as Jan explained, every quarter, OPI, which is a company in its own right, is making an assessment of what the difference will be between cost and revenue. If that is a plus, you make a profit, it's a negative, you have a loss. And they do that on a quarterly basis, every quarter. And that takes into account if you anticipated 2 quarters ago that you would have a delay of 3 months, but you have been smart over the last 2 quarters and that delay has been brought back to 6 weeks or 4 weeks, and then all of a sudden the provision that you took then, which you thought was the right amount, is now being lowered on the back of that you get a release. Now, as you progress towards full completion, the visibility on the end result obviously becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. And that's why we have said, if we now look with the knowledge of today at the financial outcome of this project, then we can still improve in the best case scenario to 77.5 million. Now, if we are at 111, that means an improvement. What is it? Almost 40 million, I believe, quickly. In the worst case scenario, we stay where we are. And then there is a best estimate at this moment in time. And that does not rule out that you will be better than minus 77 or worse than 110. Those are still possibilities, but if you have to put a band, then this is it. And what we have said at the time, there are insurance claims on OpenAI which develop over time, and that's not one, that is a variety of construction or risk, professional indemnity and whatever have you. There are regular scope changes which we need to discuss with the client, and there are issues from the past that we always to discuss with the client. And again, similar to the solution to Nagin, this is our view of the world. And as is often the case, the other side of the table has also a view and is quite often not the same as ours. So there will be a debate.
The second part of the question was how your discussions with Rijkswaterstaat were progressing differently.
We're in discussion with them, and we're now preparing for, you know, in the complex there are certain procedures that take care of, you know, how you have to approach these kind of discussions. And we're right now in the middle of it, and it could be that we you know, see something happening in the next year. It could also take 3 to 4 years if we have to go to court. Or longer.
But no change in their stance given what's happening.
No.
There's a disconnect between what you're hearing from the top of South Rijkswaterstaat and what you're dealing with apparently on a project basis.
No. What Rijkswaterstaat is saying is two things. They have a different view on the future, which still has to be implemented, and the proof of that is in the meeting. But they've also said projects in the past, and OpenAI is one of them, will be settled according to the contract that we signed in 2014. And the speed is not very high, so it's not exactly Grand Prix speed here. But it's...
It is what it is, but it will take time. Yes, we are talking to multiple parties in the market.
including the large construction companies, or are they looking at alternatives?
No, different niches. So people that are in the maritime business, companies, larger companies that you all know, and some other major companies in the heavy equipment business that we know that we work with, but no competitors at this stage. So I'm sure they have their own solutions, but we haven't seen or heard them. So they are available.
But they're more than welcome.
And they're more than welcome, and we've also priced them very reasonable because, first of all, we believe that this is also, part of, and we said that this morning to the press, we also work together with a lot of these companies, so they're not, they're of course competitors, but they are far from being enemies. They're what we call friendly competitors because, like an IMO, we work shoulder on shoulder with BAM, and we have other projects with other major players in the market, so that it's available and also at a reasonable price. We have patented it, so it's also necessary to get patent that you offer it to the market at a normal commercial price level that's acceptable.
And the mobile version is available when?
I think that we will be ready next week, and then it will take us another couple of weeks to get it certified and licensed. But that's just. So that will be on time for any project that needs it because a lot of these projects have a kind of a startup mode before they really hit the ground. So we can basically supply any project with a filter because the lead times are very short. We can build these filters in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Operator, any questions on the phone?
No, there are no questions coming in here.
Okay, thank you. Questions in the room?
Questions in the room.
The 77.5, is that dependent on court cases? Court cases with Rijkswaterstaat, with other players in the market. Is there any time frame related to...
difficult to say. There are stipulations in the contract on how... in case of differences of opinion, we need to go and we follow the contract, and then it's very difficult to say how long that will last because there can be timeouts between parties on the back of asking for additional information, etc. So that's difficult to forecast, but we don't see it happening this year. I think that this will normally go beyond the completion of the CLOC itself, and the completion is
21.
Third quarter. Yeah. No, I said yesterday the second quarter. Well, I may have been wrong. but anywhere in 2021.
The 22nd
or 3rd. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, operator. This concludes the call, so you can switch off for those listening. Thank you for your participation, and we'll talk probably at the time of when we know more about the delisting.